Hello, everybody. Welcome to Health Law Expression's Horty Springer podcast on medical staff releases. I'm Dan Mulholland, and this is my partner, Rachel Romaly. So, Rachel, there were some interesting cases out of Utah recently that upheld release language in medical staff bylaws. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. The reason we're having this podcast is because these cases, they appeared in some of the routine legal searches that we conduct, and they really were, I think, important to what we know about medical staff bylaws and have been recommending to our clients. So the first is the Fine case, and this was, again, out of Utah, and it involved a physician, an interventional radiologist, who the hospital had some concerns about his quality, and they called him into a meeting, and they asked him if he would voluntarily refrain from exercising his privileges for a little bit while they looked into the matter, which is incredibly common to happen with medical staff leaders, part of the collegial process, trying to work things out without resorting to discipline, something that we recommend to many of our clients. And so they went through this process. They had bylaws language that talked about collegial intervention. Ultimately, they told him after they did some of the review that in order to be reinstated to full practice, he needed to do a retraining program that was going to be quite substantial. And I think that he didn't care for that outcome. He did not do the retraining program. He ended up resigning his privileges and filed a lawsuit. And so the medical staff leadership slash hospital filed to have summary judgment in that lawsuit, and they drew on the release language that was in the medical staff bylaws. And they actually won that lawsuit both at the lower court level, and then it was appealed and they won that as well. And there's some really important points in the court opinion. And one of the things the court noted specifically was how broad the release language was. And although the physician argued, well, this whole collegial intervention process, it's not part of the peer review process. He used the word peer review, I think, to draw on things like only an investigation and the hearing process would be peer review and would be entitled to this release. The court rejected that argument and said, you know what, the wording of this release is so broad that it would cover it.
And that was the Supreme Court of Utah. So it's court of highest jurisdiction in one of the states. There have been other cases like this, too, in other states that upheld the release language. But then there was a Court of Appeals case about a week later, right, Rachel?
That's right.
It still had the same result, but raised some interesting questions.
It did. So, yeah, exactly 1 week later, there's another case out of Utah where a physician basically goes in. He was actually denied reappointment. He goes in and says the release language that were in the bylaws, that was in the bylaws, that should not apply because the hospital and its leaders violated the bylaws. And because they violated the bylaws, they're not entitled to enforce this contract, the bylaws as a contract. And so I should be released from having that immunity language applied against me, and I should be able to pursue this lawsuit. And ultimately, that court actually rejected the claim too, and the hospital won that as well. But there's a lot of language within the court opinion that I think you can see in that case. The court did sort of chastise the physician for doing a poor job litigating. He didn't bear some of his legal burden to make his claims properly. But even so, the court opinion does come out pretty strongly in favor of upholding the release language. And the physician in this case, you know, one of his primary complaints was, going back to regular contract law, if you're the first person who materially breaches a contract, you don't get to insist on the contract being applied. So if you breach the bylaws, which is what I'm alleging, then you don't get to have the immunity language from that same contract applied. And the court said, actually, that's not a principle that's currently upheld under Utah law. And we might revisit that in the future. It's uncertain, but that's not something that applies.
Yeah. And I think they also said that you didn't raise it below, didn't sufficiently develop the argument below. But it's very interesting that these two cases, the second case, Court of Appeals, was Cottam versus IHC Healthcare Services. And then the first one was Fine versus University of Utah.
Right.
But the point is, releases work.
They do.
And that medical staff leaders, hospitals, ought to try to look at their bylaws, look at their application forms especially, and make sure that there's strong muscular release language in it. It could be your best friend if there's ever a lawsuit. It ought to be as broad as possible too, right, Rachel? No good faith and without malice exceptions, because somebody will just allege you did it in bad faith and with malice and try to get around it.
That's right. The immunity language under state laws about your intentions, that's where a lot of our clients, I think, get stuck in long litigation. And I always talk to medical staff leaders that we always recommend, you know, don't get yourself wrapped up in that. You know, these are the leaders that are selected and elected by the medical staff. You should have trust in them. There's, you know, multi-specialty committees and several layers of review internally. So it's not really unfair to say we're going to defer to the outcome of that process and not have lawsuits to resolve other disputes.
Yeah, especially when the medical staff leaders, by and large, perform their services gratis on a volunteer basis. So
Right. They
shouldn't be put in the crosshairs of lawsuits. Now, one of the things that we always recommend is that the bylaws also say that the due process provisions, hearing and appeal provisions, and the bylaws or the credentials policy are the exclusive remedy, and that the physician also agree not to sue the medical staff, the hospital, the medical staff leaders. And then if the doctor does sue and is unsuccessful, which he or she should be if you have the right language in, they pay attorney's fees. And that happened in the Fine case as well. That's a very helpful tool to have, and that the release ought to be effective even if there's a claim of a bylaws violation. That addresses the issue that came up in the Cottam case.
That's
so,
right.
You know, substantial compliance with the bylaws is all you have, but make sure that language is in the bylaws too.
And that's actually part of the law in a lot of states. So if you would do the case law research, it's actually pretty well established that the law is you only have to substantially comply with the medical staff bylaws. So sometimes when we suggest that as part of release, you know, we get questions about, is that really fair? Why should we limit people's ability to dispute? And it's just acknowledging, you know, you're not going to be perfect. Everything's not going to be technically 100% correct, but one day difference in whether somebody received notice or whatnot, these technical violations shouldn't undermine your ability to apply your release language and have your process upheld.
And that was addressed in both of the Utah cases,
yes.
And the court found that favorably. So one of the things you may want to consider too is have your bylaws disclaim implied covenants of good faith or fair dealing. There have been a few cases recently where people have tried to use that, this idea that you always have to be fair to me and it can mean whatever I want it to mean, to disclaim that in the document. And then finally, we've used this before, consider a counterclaim for a breach of these covenants. If the doctor sues when the doctors agree not to sue, if you counterclaim for that, it might be the kind of leverage you need to settle a case or to get it dismissed. So just a few ideas about releases. You ought to have them and make sure the language is right.
That's right. And I think, too, you know, one of the other things we hear from medical staff leaders is sort of feeling bad about trying to enforce that last requirement that legal fees will be requested or that you have to pay them. And so I like to throw out there, in case you don't already know, the Healthcare Quality Improvement Act provides for that as well. So there's a federal immunity that applies to medical staff leaders and hospital leaders who engage in peer review. It already provides that legal fees will be awarded to the hospital if it prevails and to the medical staff leaders if they prevail. And a lot of state peer review statutes that protect physician leaders do the same thing. So it's not like you're creating some new unfair standard. This is well accepted, and reinforcing those provisions in your language makes a lot of sense.
You'll feel a heck of a lot worse if you're dragged through several years of litigation. Thanks
right.
very much, folks. I hope that's helped you today, and tune in for another Health Law Expressions podcast in the future.